We head to Washington for a look at the latest in national politics. Late yesterday, the Senate passed the USA Freedom Act, reforming the NSA's authority to collect Americans' bulk phone data after those provisions expired just on Monday. President Obama has already signed that bill into law. And on the 2016 campaign trail, Martin O'Malley has joined the so far limited pool of Democrats seeking the nomination. While a new poll shows that Hillary Clinton's approval numbers have fallen farther and faster than expected since she first announced her candidacy. Here with us now to talk about that and more, we have David Friedlander. He's a contributing writer at the Daily Beast. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with this NSA, USA Freedom Act. A couple years in the making now, these revisions. Does the USA Freedom Act have its roots going back to the whole Edward Snowden bulk revelations?
Yeah, I mean, I think Snowden is sort of the father of this reform in a way. I mean, but, you know, people have been uncomfortable with it for a number of years, but certainly, you know, the main revelations that the government was, you know, collecting massive amounts of phone call data traces back to the Snowden revelations.
So why did it take, you know, the expiration of these provisions to actually do something to change them?
Well, I mean, I think that one sort of, you know, clever thing in a way that this law had was it did it was going to expire. I mean, I wonder if we sort of wish that there were more laws that did that. There was just probably not a political will, I think, really to change it on its own unless there was, you know, it was going to sunset and the provisions needed to be looked at again.
So what exactly changes now, David, under this new law?
The bulk of the old Patriot Act remains in place. But, you know, one thing that has changed is that the government no longer will be keeping and storing phone call data, which is not the sort of content of phone calls themselves, but rather who you called, when you called them, for how long, that kind of thing. And that will stay with the phone companies, and the government will need to get a warrant in order to look at that information. There's also a few changes to look at, you know, how those warrants are acquired, which is through the FISA court.
Now, this is a compromise, David. So not everyone's happy. In fact, maybe no one's happy. When you look at somebody like Rand Paul, running for president, a senator from Kentucky, he says this doesn't go far enough. What's the argument that this didn't go far enough?
Well, I mean, I think it still, you know, contains massive surveillance powers for the federal government. I mean, they really have the ability to track, you know, people without a warrant, to get around even getting a warrant in some cases. And there are many civil libertarians who felt that, you know, the Patriot Act really just needed to be torn down completely and built up again.
And then for the other side of that, you just go to the other side of Kentucky's senatorial delegation. Mitch McConnell didn't want even these changes, and a lot of hawks on both sides of the aisle think this goes far. It goes too far. It dilutes anti-terrorist authority.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's people who still feel that we're vulnerable and that these laws really help keep the country safe. I mean, I think it should be noted that there's, you know, there's no evidence, in fact, that these controversial provisions that were amended actually had any role in breaking up any terrorist plots, which that's something I think should be noted.
So this was briefly an issue in the presidential race with, you know, Senator Paul making a big deal of it, delaying the vote. Ultimately, it happened anyway. Now that this is done, now that this is passed and signed, do you think these NSA surveillance issues will continue to be part of the presidential race?
You know, I think as long as Rand Paul is in the race, yeah, I mean, for sure. I think this has sort of been his calling card, is, you know, protecting the civil liberties of Americans. I mean, he was dashing off fundraising letters as this, you know, vote and debate was going on in the Senate. So, and you know, he's the only one out there, really, that's coming at it from this angle. So I think that, I think it'll still be something that'll be talked about.
Now, staying with Congress for a moment, President Obama issued a veto threat, reissued, I should say, of the Senate's defense policy bill. What's the issue here? What's the controversy?
Well, I mean, essentially, you know, in 2011, I think it was, Congress got together and sort of cut government across the board, what was known as sequestration, and with the military was cut and some social programs were cut, and it was sort of a poison pill for both sides. Republicans in Congress now want to sort of restore in a very kind of backhanded way some of that military money, is essentially what's going on.
Right. So there's a sort of a budget trick in a way. They're saying, okay, we've got the military budget that's actually part of the budget and it still fits sequestration. And then we've got this war funding that doesn't count somehow in the budget. We're going to increase that to bring up the military funding levels. Did I get that right, basically?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're sort of looking at this other pool of money that isn't officially part of the budget and trying to sort of added on to the defense spending. And there are some other provisions in there, too, which the administration objects to. There's a base closing provision that they're objecting to. That Congress, the Republicans in Congress, are trying to restore some weapons programs that the administration wants to end, and other things about sort of subsidizing military housing for married couples and stuff like that.
Talking to David Friedlander from the Daily Beast about the latest in national politics. All right, let's dive into presidential politics. Only, what, 15 months away or something like that? So a new Democratic candidate here, Martin O'Malley, former governor until very recently of Maryland, joined the Democratic race along with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. So how is he going to separate himself from Hillary Clinton, try to knock her off that inevitable status?
Well, I mean, I think he's sort of attacking her from the left in a way, but he's a sort of imperfect messenger for that, especially with Bernie Sanders in the race, who's a sort of perfect messenger for sort of restive liberals who are upset with Hillary Clinton. I mean, O'Malley is a two-term governor of Baltimore, where he was a sort of tough on crime. Two-term mayor of Baltimore. He was a tough-on-crime mayor there. He was a two-term governor of Maryland and had a liberal record there. But nothing, not a sort of fist-raising Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders type of record either.
So looking at it from where you are, at this point, unless something big changes, does a candidate not named Hillary Clinton have a realistic shot at the nomination?
Oh, no. I mean, one hates to make predictions in this business, but it would take something really, really drastic. And the sort of drip, drip, drip of bad news about Hillary Clinton that's come out. And the thing that hasn't really dented her standing among, you know, the party faithful makes me think that there's very little out there that possibly could.
So, yeah, looking at that drip of bad news, a new CNN poll, Hillary Clinton's favorability ratings dropped to 46%, her highest ever rating back in 2011, 69%. So that's a decent drop in a short period of time. Is that just something that happens when you officially say, I am a candidate now, and you start to getting that level of attention and skepticism?
I think it is. I mean, you know, there's a way in which, you know, I mean, the people that have very high approval ratings are sort of not political people, right? It's like Oprah Winfrey, you know, LeBron James, right? I mean, it's not people who get in the sort of, you know, thrust and parry of the political season and the political back and forth. And that has a lot to do with Hillary Clinton's declining popularity. And a lot of it has to do also with the fact that, I mean, she's just been getting battered in the press over the emails and the Clinton Foundation stuff. So, you know, it's been a sort of tough stretch for her, and one in which they haven't really been out there generating their own kind of positive news and positive coverage.
So with that steady drip of news about the Clinton Foundation and the donations and her email account, even if that doesn't keep her from winning the nomination, is this something that people are going to still care about in the general election next year?
I would guess so. I mean, it's hard to know how that's going to play out. Is it one of those things where the public is just sort of tired of it at this point? And, you know, at that point, and they sort of ignore those stories, or does it continue to kind of weigh on her? Obviously, Republicans will continue to weigh on her. I mean, I think what we're looking at in 2016 is what's going to be a very close election, just as 2012 and 2008 were, and 2004 and 2000, you know, going back, and it's going to be a really sort of precinct-to-precinct battle. And maybe these sort of larger national stories probably kind of in the end won't matter as much as we think right now.
And I've seen reports that people within Hillary Clinton's campaign are saying, hey, let's not act like we're a sure thing. Let's not act like we're inevitable. That is our biggest obstacle. We have nothing to fear but ourselves at this point.
I mean, they say that, but you know, and they I talk to people in the camp who say, you know, we're running as if we're 20 points behind. But of course, they're not running as if they're 20 points behind. I mean, if they were really 20 points behind, they wouldn't be holding these small round tables with six people and you know, in select towns and early primary states, which is exactly what they are doing. You know, they'd be fighting for media attention and holding big rallies, and they're not doing any of that.
So looking at the other side briefly, the growing roster of Republican candidates for president, any thoughts on what's out there this week?
Well, on the GOP side, I mean, they just seem to be, you know, expanding and growing. It's like a sponge or something that you put a little water in it. It keeps growing as big as the glass that can paint it. You know, I don't know. I mean, they're still fighting it out. It looks like there are, we're sort of settled into a top tier of contenders. It includes Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and, of course, your own home state governor, Scott Walker.
And of course, anything we say right now has to have the caveat: it's still really early. A lot can change, can't it?
Sure. I mean, it is still really early, but you know, it's not. I don't know. I mean, these things it gets late quickly. Let me put it that way. And commitments get made, money gets locked up, and you know, it's really better to be in first place than not.
All right, David. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's David Friedlander, contributing writer at The Daily Beast.